Like what your screen, man. You got a good setup there.
Thanks, man. And now you know what I like doing lately is I like hitting record. We just hit record. Hey, everybody, how's it going? Welcome to the Protectors. A very special guest today. I have Rick Hogg, Warhog Tactical. Am I pronouncing that right? I mean, how can you mispronounce Hogg? Is it a Hogg?
Dude, you would be no. Here's the thing, brother. You'd be surprised. I had people that not so much when I was a kid. I mean, Hogg was Hogg. I mean, because you got to think back then, Boss Hogg. Everyone knew how to pronounce Hogg, right? As you start getting a little older in life, people try to be, if you want to say, politically correct. Uh-huh. You know, is it Hogg? It's like, no, it's Hogg. It was funny when I was in seventh group, I had an old Sergeant Major. His name was Sergeant Major Roach. And he would always, it was funny because we'd go back and forth. He'd be like, why do people try to call me Roche? I said, Sergeant Major, I have no idea, man. I said, I'm in the same boat. Why is it Hogg? You know, it's Hogg. You know, say like it is, two G's. But yeah, it's comical, man.
I know. It reminds me of that commercial where the guy's like, you know, thank you, Mr. Dumbass, and blah, blah, blah. And he's going, dumbass. And he's like, it's Dumas, you asshole. You know, you brought up a good thing, Boss Hogg. A lot of people, like, there's like two different audiences. You have like the younger ones who look at my name and I go, oh, you're like this weird Dragon Ball Z thing. And then you have our generation's like, oh, Brian Piccolo, Brian Song.
Oh, yeah.
Are you related? I'm like, yeah, my brother is. And they're like, really? Because my brother's named Brian Piccolo, and he played that number when he was in high school football. But it's like, yeah, man, it's this whole name, and especially when the social media thing, man. That's one thing we're going to jump right off the bat with today is like, we met through social media. Yep. I meet so many different people through social media, ping each other back and forth. But today we're talking on, I don't even know what day today is, Monday, and social media is down. You know, Facebook went down, Instagram went down, and WhatsApp went down. And the big connection there is they're all owned by one major corporation. Yep. So how do we maintain these lines of communication in this day and age?
You know, so when I first got started in this game, I thought social was the way to reach out. And then as I start getting wiser, it's like, no way, man. So check it out. Warhog.com. We're still up and running, man. You want to send me a message? You want to, you know, you can DM me. Via warhog.com. You can send me an email. You can still communicate with me. And then, oh, by the way, I still have the ability to communicate with people. Yeah. If I wanted to send out, you know, a newsletter, super blast, whatever, or I can just, you know, kind of pick and choose what I want. So I think as I matured, in this whole entrepreneurship thing and finding out that, you know, here's the deal, Facebook, Instagram, all these guys, they are ad agencies. That's all they are. If you think they're doing anything different, you've lost your mind. They don't care about you. What they care about is getting your dollars. But warhog.com, I control that domain. That is, you know, if you want to sit there and contact me, the provider I'm using is great. You know, DM will pop up. Cool, man. So I got away from personally, people go, hey, what's your handles? Warhog.com. That's all it is. So I would just say, hey, if you're an entrepreneur out there, you've got a website, do you have that ability, number one, to collect people's emails? Because let's be an honest broker. This day and age, I don't really care. All right, you got umpteen gazillion followers, okay? Are they actual potential clients? Or are they just somebody that presses the button today to try to get a follow back, then unpresses it tomorrow? I mean, what I care about is if you're going to warhog.com, you sign up for my newsletter, you care about what I'm saying, you're interacting that way, that's the way to do it. So I would just caution people this day and age, entrepreneurial side, get your website up, have a way that you can collect people's email address, you know, and then just contact those people, you know, periodically. I'm not bombarding people with a bunch of newsletters because, truth be told, I am a one-man show, and I'm like a one-legged man in the ass-kicking contest, man, trying to balance everything.
Hey, Rick, welcome to the one-man show, because the Protectors is all one man.
don't let the secret out.
Hey, but, oh, by the way, that's general neutral. General, one person.
Hey, man, that's it. You know, but I always use we, so it sounds more powerful. Like,
oh, absolutely.
We do this and we do that. And it's really me, but
I'm glad I'm not the only one, man.
No, man.
You know what? You actually really, it's weird. My buddy put a group text out today, and he says, hey, you know what? And this is before the Facebook and everything went down. He's like, you know, I'm getting tired. We need to go back to old fashioned message boards and stuff. And I'm like, you know, I bought all the domains, anything so people can find me. I have like jasonpiccolo.us. I got Protectors Life, Protectors, The Protector Life, We the Protectors, jasonpiccolo. Whatever cares because I care. But yeah, we need to really, and it's really cheap to get a domain. It is. Mm-hmm. As long as you're not getting like godaddy.123.com or whatever, you know what? You can get like Warhawk. That's an easy mm-hmm. domain to get. It's an easy yep. one to remember. Get your name, get something naming convention and start building up that mail list. Even if you're not thinking about a business right now, but you just want to maintain social contact with people, it's nice to have an email list going, man. And I really, really like your advice because I need to get my email list going, especially after today, man.
Well, and that's the whole thing, Jason, right? So I'm going to tell you, man, when I originally got in this game, I was so far behind the power curve. And I would just say, especially for my either first responders or my veteran that are getting ready to retire, that are looking to be an entrepreneur. And yes, you should, and you can. You've worked for the man for umpteen years, so why don't you mm-hmm. be the man for a while? But here's the thing. I didn't really get any super good marketing advice. So when I first got out behind the power curve, I had no social. My industry partner started hitting me up. Hey, man, we can't find you on social. Where are you at? And, oh, I'm building it. You know, because you've seen enough websites that says under construction. I said, got to be the same for social, right? So here I am wiggling back from SHOT Show talking to my kids going, hey, what's this Instagram and Facebook stuff? And how do we get this thing set up? And yeah, I mean, you know the deal, man. Not knowing, mm-hmm. hey, what hashtags to use, how to manipulate it to you. But if you start looking, you threw up a picture and some stuff, right? But what were you really doing? Was I educating the consumer? Was I telling them, hey, this is more about, you know, Warhawk Tactical? Was I saying, hey, go to my website and sign up for my email list? Nope. There was no really like call to action if you want to use that type of verbiage. It was just arbitrary slapping some stuff out there. So really what you kind of see more is that every post has a call to action, which is, hey, go sign up for a newsletter. And then it says, oh, by the way, if you're interested, you know, because I am a co-host of On the Range podcast, go to our Patreon page, support, you know, On the Range podcast, what we're doing there, early access to stuff. So it's trying to drive the message and getting the word out there, what we're doing. And the other thing I would tell those entrepreneurs out there is, why am I Warhawk Tactical? I'll tell you this, my first name was rubbish. I thought it was cool, but I had a buddy of mine go, where's your name? There was no identity tied to it. And I'm not saying if you've got some other name out there, that's fine. But if you look at US history, and I'm a super fan of it because I think we repeat it too much and guys don't go back and actually look at the history books. Why is Colt called Colt? Why Smith & Wesson, Smith & Wesson? Daniel Defense, Glock. I mean, we can go on and on. These different firearms manufacturers, at least because that's the space that I'm in. Wow, it's people's names. What a concept. So mm-hmm. having the name Hog going, okay, how do we incorporate it? So slapped all stuff around, you know, thought about, hey, Warhog, you know, and then I was going to leave it Warhog, but then you got to kind of throw the tactical on there because it just kind of goes. But then you think, yeah, most people don't want to type that stuff out. So just put warhog.com. It's that much easier. And just going from there, you know, so little things like, hey, we capitalize the entire hog, H-O-G-G, just little things to step out. So yeah, man, it's
marketing for us older generation, but you know, the young people don't understand the value of these social medias and building their brand. Mm-hmm. You know, if you're in your 20s and you want to be, you don't want to be a quote unquote influencer because that's bullshit. You're not getting anything out of it. And when you talk about the people that are following you, how many are legitimately going to engage? Mm-hmm. How many are going to buy your product? And that product might be you. The other thing you brought up too was I always tell people, I'm like, if you want a podcast, mm-hmm. Just do it because that's the other thing. You know, you and I both put up a podcast and they stream on like 20 different platforms. Mm-hmm. So it's always out there. When you have these communication breakdowns like today, like I could put this out tonight. I could put it, if I don't have a platform, I could put it, drop an MP3 on my website. It's out there.
Yeah.
But you need to build the network the old fashioned way and really hustle.
Yeah. 100%. But I'm going to throw some advice out there as far as the podcast thing goes, because we've learned some valuable lessons with that. Yes. And really it was my co-host Mark that he was the one when the whole pandemic thing went on, if you want to call it that, China virus, whatever word you want, I don't care, right? So when we had our U.S. issues, let's just say, you know, he reached out and said, hey, man, what do you think about a podcast? Sure. What do I know about podcasting? What do he know? Nothing. So I would just caution, if you're going to be a first-time podcaster, can you do a free platform? You can. But what we found as we started growing, hey, we're not quite getting the reach. So it's like anything else. There's nothing free in this world. If you think there is, you know, you are sadly mistaken. So we ended up swapping over, and I'll just tell you straight up, you know, we use Podbean. The one thing I like about Podbean is I can go live right now if I wanted to. And again, I'm not having to upload something, then download it. Dude, if we want to sit there and crank up a live show, boom, you know, and those that are on Podbean, you're getting it live. And oh, by the way, you can have your guest actually call in, question in. So similar to doing StreamYard, you know, if you were to do a live broadcast. So there's all these platforms out there that you just have to get smart on. What do they offer? What do they give you? And then, like you said, if there is a communication breakdown, if I wanted to sit there and go, all right, hey guys, fire up the podcast, you know, people are going to get their little notifications. And that's why it's important, regardless, whatever you're using, click those notification buttons. And then, oh, by the way, go back and periodically check, because I've had people that thought I was out of business because they were no longer following me. They were no longer getting notifications. And they're like, you know, next, you know, an email, right? Shocking. We still can communicate that way. I get an email saying, hey man, you out of business. What's going on? I haven't heard from you. I'm like, excuse me. It's like, no, dude, we're alive and well. It's like, I've got no notifications. I've got nothing. He went back and checked his stuff. And sure enough, you know, he, the magic algorithm gnomes that are out there in the interweb land, somehow flipped the magic switches and he was no longer following me. So I just ask people, it's a two-way street, right? So it's like, hit the follow, hit the like, hit the subscribe, you know, leave the rating, leave the review. And you're like, why? Because it just helps us get better reach out there. So if you like what you're hearing, you know, whether it's your show, my show, anyone else's show, if you support these guys out there, it costs you literally 10 seconds of your time. Subscribe to it. Boom. Click the little notification button. And here's the thing. It was funny because when I was on Working Dog Radio, they tried to leave me the eggplant emojis for a review, and they said they couldn't, but then again, somebody else did. So that's kind of the running joke. So I don't care if you want to send me an eggplant emoji. It just,
yeah, it put worked. It out there. Yeah. Dude, it doesn't matter.
It doesn't. No, it's just, that's a way that you can support people. You know, same thing on social, whether it's just, you don't have to repost something to my, to your feed, put it on the story. You know, there's so many different ways you can help get the word out there. And I think that's the biggest thing is, I don't call them sponsors. They're my partners, right? Because partnerships, we try to help everyone else out. Hey, how do I spread your word? How do you spread mine? How do we all work together? The sooner we figure that out, trust me, there's enough work for everybody out there.
Absolutely. And that's what drives me nuts about this influencer world is that there is enough for everybody, man. Even, I mean, you think about the networks out there. So me, law enforcement, military, veterans, everything. Same thing with you. Your network is now my network. Your network is part of my network. My network is part of your network. Absolutely. It just keeps expanding. When you're selling a product, it's like you have training. And that's one thing we're going to get into in a little while. Mine is I have a podcast. I'm not really selling anything yet, but I'm building my brand for eventually I will sell something. I don't know what I'm going to sell. Probably myself, you know. Not going to get much money for the body, but hey, you know what? I'm going to sell my voice.
Sure.
But that's the thing is build your network. But when you become one of these, you know, megalomaniacs that are just so focused on themselves that are really just selling this ideal of themselves, drives me nuts. That's all I have to say about that. Like, Forrest Gump would say.
Yep. But you know, I got to hit on this, Jason, right? So the quote unquote influencer, right? So you see a lot of people trying to chase that. And it's like, what are you trying to chase? Mm-hmm. So let's be an honest broker. What is an influencer? What does all that mean? So from my standpoint, it's how do I get, you know, I'm a US based company, so I need US customers. Great. You got a million followers. But if you really look at the analytics, where are they at? You know, I got
engagement. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, if you're a global brand, cool. Obviously I'm putting my stuff in English and yeah, you can on some of these things translate it, but are you really translating pure? Is it coming across? You know, it is what it is. And, unfortunately, you know, social is a pro and con. I'm not a super fan of it, to be honest with you. I think it'll be the demise of the world. When we all take a step back here in history to go, hey man, it's just, it rots people's brains. You know, you hear people, oh, I'm all fired up about what?
I know.
Because somebody put some text out there. Who cares, man? You know, don't get suckered for it. And that's
Cause some guy's in their basement right now. Yeah. He's like on the couch with, you know, Cheetos all over his stomach texting. I hate this guy. This guy's an asshole.
Yeah.
I, you know, cause I write a lot of editorials and op-eds and stuff like that. I don't read the comments that much because as soon as I get down there, people are like, especially if I talk about trafficking, one conspiracy after the other. And oh my God, it's like, look, the audience that reads it and doesn't comment, get something out of it. The ones that comment are usually trying to stir some emotion and who knows who a bot is. So you're right. Social media. And I think that's another reason we need to go back to the old fashioned, and I'm saying old fashioned. It's not like we're talking about rotary phones now, just like mail lists, web pages.
What's wrong with the rotary phone? I'm going to stop you there.
I probably have one around here somewhere.
Oh, Jason, I got to tell you this, man. And I know we're totally going off track.
No, it's fine, man.
I was rolling through West Virginia. Love that place, right? What did I come across? A payphone.
Holy
what
shit.
What was next? Oh, yeah, dude. Now, I should have actually just, you know, made a call just for giggles, right? But what was next to that? Instructions. I was like, really?
Oh, my God.
Put money in here. You know, lift up receiver or whatever. You know, press buttons. I'm like, oh, man. But I was like, yeah, payphone.
I don't.
Love it.
I don't. I only know. I know my wife's phone number, but I don't know anybody else's phone number. That's what's bad. Like my kids have cell phones now. I'm like, man, I don't even know what their phone numbers are.
Yeah. No, you just hit the speed dial or their contact.
Oh, shit.
Yeah.
You know, and that's the other thing. It's like, I got to, you know, because I live in D.C. and I remember when I worked downtown, I was always afraid. And we'll get into training here in a minute, but this is part of it. This is part of the protect your house and that lines of communication. And I remember my kids were in daycare and they were right by the National Mall. And my wife worked over at the bureau headquarters and I was working over at the ICE headquarters. So the kids are right in between us. And I'm always like, you know what? If something happens, blackout, an attack, anything, how am I going to be able to communicate with her and set up some sort of like fallback area, go get our kids and get the hell out of the, out of the city. So I bought these little, 2 mile radius handhelds. And I'm like, you know, I'm all fire. But trying to get her to get into it and carry this thing around is kind of be like another thing. So then I'm looking at other means of communication, like, okay, you could attach this thing to your cell phone and it turns it into like a device. And I'm like, man, now I'm, you know, I really like the idea of ham radio, but then you got to get a ham radio license. And I'm like, you know what? If shit hits the fan, I'm going to get two of them. And I'll give her one and be like, hey, you know what? Put me in jail.
Yeah.
But the thing is you have to have some sort of line of communications and you have to prepare. And it's not preparing for the zombie apocalypse. And, you know, the zombie apocalypse, you know what I know, it could be anything. It could be like fuel goes through the roof. People can't get fuel. Fuel doesn't messes up the supply chain. Supply chain gets messed up. You're not getting food. Food doesn't go on a table. You go other places for food. And that food and subsistence could be in my house. That's where they're going to try to go. So you have to start planning. And my big thing is protect this house is like, okay, what am I going to do to protect this house? Do I have enough supplies here to last me 72 hours at least for a family of four? Am I trained?
I'm going to pause you. I'm going to pause you for a second on the preparedness thing, right? So 72 is a good rule of thumb. But don't a lot of people take that as gospel and I would caution them. So you have to look at, each area is different as far as natural disasters that happen and potentials of extended preparedness. So, for example, I think the longest we've been is 10 days without, you know, power around here. So that's kind of, at least for me, dealing with the hurricanes and stuff like that, that's my planning. And I would just tell people, look at your area because each area is going to be different.
Yeah.
But 72 is a good, that's a good window, but that's barring everything get settled.
Yes.
Go back, look in the history books, right? Ooh, there's that whole H word again that came up and go, what has been, if you want to say the worst disaster to hit at that point, and then plan for that.
Yeah. And you know, when the pandemic first started happening, I had enough supplies to last us for 30 days. And I was buying like, you know, lard and all sorts of weird shit. My wife's like, what are you doing? I'm like, look, things are going to taste like shit after you eat them for the same time over and over again. You got to think a little bit ahead of time and we got to, and then you got to start thinking about, okay, I'm outside of DC. I'm going to want to get the fuck away from this place. So where are we going to go? Are we going to go to, you know, we're going to go to family. We're going to go to friends. We're going to go somewhere. But the initial step is having the training and having the right mind. Like I said before, you and I have both been in some sort of background where we've had training mm-hmm. you know, I'm putting that lightly because you were highly trained. But the normal person out there needs to be trained. They need to have the basic fundamentals at least to get them by, to at least to know what they're doing. Mm-hmm. And that's what I want to talk about, like your training. Like I was talking, the reason I brought the influencers up before too is because just because you have a tab, a scroll or whatever, or you've been part of an agency, I've interviewed a ton of people that were quote unquote CIA who were like analysts or whatever. Mm-hmm. Doesn't mean that they're like, you know, Jason Bourne. Just yeah. because you're SF or just because you're Ranger or infantry or whatever doesn't mean you're a trainer. You're trained, mm-hmm. yes, but you're not a trainer.
Sure.
And so when you started the Warhog Tactical, after training and then starting to train civilians, let's talk about that. I would almost think it would be almost quasi easier to train a civilian because they don't have ingrained fundamentals.
So here's the hardest thing, you know, teaching a skill set. That's if I could get into people's eyes, that because that's the one thing I can't tell exactly what people are looking at. There are sometimes I can. So like I can tell when they're peeking over their sights to see their impacts and stuff like that. But can I really tell, are you focused on that front side post? Are you actually seeing what you're supposed to see? I can guess, I can explain and hope that comes through. But here's the thing. I even have some LE and some mil guys that are very receptive and open. I've got some that are very closed. Civilians are the same way. Well, so-and-so says this. Well, that's great for so-and-so. And I don't downplay any other instructor because I'm all about the why. So here's a prime example. So I need to look at the ejection port of my AR-15 to tell me the status of the rifle. No, the rifle talks to you if you understand it, if you've got enough time behind it. So like we do a specific drill on the reload. We'll sit there. I have them put two bullets in the magazine because I want them to fire one, feel that full recoil impulse. And then the second bullet, you're going to feel and maybe hear something different. Did you catch it? Some guys go, yep. Some guys go, nope. Okay, cool. If you didn't, we're going to repeat and repeat because that gun's going to talk to you. Like, well, I got to look at it. And I was like, okay, that's cool out here in this daylight range. Let's shut the lights off. Now it's pitch black. What are you looking at? And you just pose that question, not saying somebody else's technique is wrong, or just saying for Rick's, what Rick is teaching at the Warhog Tactical side, to me, that's not efficient. I'm wasting precious hundreds of a second, because sometimes that's what gunfights are boiling down to, where, why are you looking? Why you can't? The gun doesn't work. Do something, whatever it may be. If it's getting your secondary, if you're going into, you know, reload, whatever the case may be. And again, that's drawing off of experience. So there was a situation one night, I should not be on this planet, one like many other ones. Old boy could not manipulate his safety on his AK. It was a folding stock variant. And clearly, he had me dead to rights just because of the way the situation was set up. Watched him three separate occasions try to push down on that select lever, and he couldn't. And he just wasn't familiar with his firearm. Had he been, he would have had me all day long. So, you know, it's not just Rick pulling out some things going, hey, man, no, I want you to be as efficient as possible. And then trust me, when your efficiency is there, your speed will come along. I'm not worried about, you know, guys trying to go sub this, sub that. Oh, let's just get your skill set, lay a foundation, not lay, you know, a quarter inch thick concrete foundation. Nope. I want a couple feet mm-hmm. of concrete there. I want, you know, reinforced rebar in there. I want it where, hey, man, it's second nature. And I get it. You know, I've only got a couple days with these guys, right? So yes, I'm trying to push a skill set as well. But the mindset's the other thing. So when you look at it, the way I start every class, and I love my LE guys, man, love them to death. Because first thing we do is the Warhog self-eval. What? Shoot an eval cold? Come on, man. We can't be doing that. Yep. And I explain to them, you know, I give them minimal information, right? We get out there, get a safety brief, which that's always interesting, trying to pull the four rules of firearm safety out of these guys. Should just roll off your tongue, but, you know, and I've got a couple nuances I add, and I just add to. The rules stay the same, but just adding a little bit to it. And then we go shoot the Warhog self-eval. But I tell them, as soon as we're getting out on the range, I said, don't treat this like the flat range. Treat it like the street. And the Warhog self-eval, you've got a smaller index card, and the secret's already out there. I've put it out enough. So you get a smaller index card at the left. At the lower left, and you've got a larger one at the upper right. Why do I do it that way? Because most shooters are right-handed. I know it's easy to go left to right, but the bigger card is up in the right-hand corner. And you'd be surprised how many guys shoot the lower first, you know, and they shoot the upper, got to do a speed magazine change, you know, back and back. Now, yes. Do I halfway screw them and point to the lower and said, hey, three on one, three on the other. Yep. I just said three on one, three on the other. You fell for my subliminal of me pointing to the lower one. Well, you pointed. Yeah, I pointed. Did I say? Nope. And we started off right there from the get go. Boom. I need you thinking, because when we're all said and done, I said, hey, man, I told you to treat this like the street. Which one should we engage first? The bigger one, probably closer. Ah, here we go. Now we're starting to get things going. So right from jump street, before any instruction, anything, it's like, this is not your classic law enforcement range. Nope. I need them to think. So that just, you know, that's the other part, is you've got to get people to understand and think and rationalize. And again, some of these guys in the training departments, there's some absolute rubbish going out there. So this, oh, you know, you have to slingshot your pistol because you're going to lose your fine motor skills. And I'm like, okay, cool. But magically I can press this magazine release to release the magazine, but I can't hit a slide release. Okay. I would rather you go, hey, Mr. Glock never designed this pistol to be released by this little button on the side. Cool. Cause yeah, that's the truth, but we're still using, you know, old stuff. The hand in front of the chest. Oh, prior to body armor, put your hand up there, because that seems to, you know, it'll stop bullets better. All this stuff, but guys don't know the why.
I you know, man, I know. Almost 22 years now, when I went to the Border Patrol Academy, it was the same way. You have to slingshot. You got a slingshot. You got a slingshot. And the reason you put your arm in front of your hand is your chest when you're doing a 1.5 yard line is so you don't shoot your hand.
Well,
I'm like, you know. Yeah. But no, but the other principle is like, oh, you're going to stop bullets. No, you're just going to go right through that fleshy piece of shit.
It is. It briefs well. I mean, Richard Davis, I mean, once that whole part came out, there was no reason to put your hand up there anymore, but we're still teaching it. Yet, you know, guys aren't. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, I was going to say, when you brought up the slide release, I'm like, man, my times changed, personal times, because I like to shoot and get bullets down range. Mm-hmm. I like to reload and get more bullets down range. The slingshot thing, when I stopped doing that, it's amazing how much time. And when you're talking like that split second, how much time you get by getting that back. Mm-hmm. But yeah, man, I know exactly where you're coming from, man.
Oh, and we can go on. I mean, if you want to talk the whole training thing, I mean, there's all kinds of things we can talk about.
My big thing though, which when it comes to training, is get training. If I come out by you, I want to go to one of your courses. Mm-hmm. I need to go to more courses myself. And I've been in this game a long time, but I love training. I want to learn something new.
Yep.
And so a couple of years ago, it was when the pandemic started going. Another thing I did was I noticed a lot of people, right, left, in between, old people, young people, buying guns. And I said, you know what? Mm-hmm. Here in Virginia, in order to get CCW and stuff, you need to be trained by an NRA instructor. That's kind of one of the only things I really look at anymore. So I went and got my NRA instructor. But in order to get that, you had to go to like the basic course. And I'm looking around that room, man. There's like 70, 80-year-old, obviously, you know what party they voted for. You had people in their 20s, same thing. Getting a gun for the first time because they know the importance of it. It's protect this house, man. And these people need training. That's one thing I always tell people. I'm like, you can pick up this gun. You can get your basic fundamentals. You can go to this basic NRA instructor thing. But you really need to take it the next step. You need at least – how many hours do you think you need to be a basic? Just have a good fundamentals. 1,000? No, not 1,000. But you need a lot, man.
Here's the thing. It's a twofold deal, right? So – I'll just kind of use the Warhawk methodology. I may have, you know, an officer for a day. I might have, you know, regular civilian for a day. I might have them for 2 days, right? I might have them for a week. Doesn't matter how long I got them for. There's some basic, you know, foundational work that we lay. However, everyone thinks they've got to go to the range to train. And that's the furthest thing from the truth. Yep. I need to go there to confirm my marksmanship and my recoil mitigation. That's what I need the range for. Mm-hmm. All my firearms manipulation can be done at the house. Because here's the thing. So if you look at the Warhog Tactical Combat Training Facility, won't say where it's at, but do I have to shoot bullets? Nope. Because I can sit there and work my hands on Mr. Bob, right? And then I'm a big advocate of airsoft. I've got an electronic target that goes with it, so I can sit there, smack Bob around, do my business, and then, oh, draw my airsoft out because it's running the same holster, same rig as the normal firearm I'm carrying, do some shooting there, right? So I'm working my marksmanship, but I'm also working my hands. I can do physical dress stuff, so I'm elevating my heart rate, do all the same stuff again. You know, and that's the part that people don't get, and I just challenge them. It's like, hey, man, here's all I need. If you can give me 5 minutes, 3 days a week, 15 minutes of your time, just for firearms manipulation, man, when you go out to the range, you're going to be crushing it. And then the other thing is nobody has any type of training log, notebook, anything on what they're going to do for their dry fire sessions, for the live fire sessions. Hey, buy some bullets, go out to the range. It's like, what are you doing? Nothing. You know, if I've got, you know, and people box like, well, I've only got 50 bullets. Cool. What are you going to do with those 50 bullets? You know, I can tell you kind of what Rick's going to do, but is that important to you? I mean, I don't know. And then the other thing we kind of lay down is, you know, shooting's an unemotional event. I don't care whether you're shooting paper. I don't care whether you're shooting a person. And I got it. People are going to go, oh, you're Mr. Murderous. Nope. It's an unemotional event. And I at least speak, I always speak from the state of North Carolina. The state of North Carolina says imminent threat of death, great bodily harm, or sexual assault. I can use deadly force to defend myself. Okay, cool. There's not, if you're sitting there when you're out at the range and you throw that shot and you kick in the dirt and you're cussing and screaming, dude, it's unemotional. What did you do wrong to throw the shot? Okay, that's water off your back. Don't do that. Fix what you got to do. Make the shot and boom. And it's no different, you know, when you're out in the range, you know, if, or I should say out in the street, and then you did have that deadly force encounter. It's an unemotional event. Hey, man, you voted ill intent towards me. Sorry, dude. Nothing personal. It's just business at that point. Because one other thing we do, you know, at Warhawk Tactical side is you'll always see, I don't care whether it's my civilians, military, law enforcement, bring an old t-shirt that you can shoot. And they're like, what are we doing with this? And we got it all set up, and you can go to my YouTube page and see how we set all this stuff up. But I actually have people that shoot t-shirts because you're not going to see exactly where your holes are at. You got to be able to sit there and call your shots. Truth
That's
be told.
That's a damn good idea, man.
Yeah, buddy. You know, go to, so you can check us out on, so easy thing, go to warhog.com. From there, you can, you know, I might even have that video on the training video side, but it'll get you a link to YouTube and you can see that stuff. But the ability to call your shot is critical. And if people don't know where to put their shots at, you know, you're just out there shooting bullets. Now, here's the sad thing, Jason. I've had some law enforcement officers out on the range say, I don't feel comfortable doing this drill. And I'm like, hey, buddy, you might want to sit there and go see whoever your supervisor is. Go turn your badge and gun in and go about your merry way or find an administrative job or something.
We could have a hell of a long talk on that. We should do a roundtable on the current state of training, realistic training, and everything sometime. Because, man, it's changed. You know, I shoot to stop, and whether those bullets go in the head, the body, or wherever, it's going to be shooting the stop. And the people don't understand. God, man. So my wife, I don't talk about the bureau she works for, but it's like FBI. But anyway, a lot of people that join these agencies, and she did, she was a not a recruiter, but the applicant coordinator, a special agent for a long time, don't realize that they're going to actually have to carry a gun and put people in jail. And doesn't matter if you go in the FBI thinking you're going to go after serial killers, you're mistaken. No.
Yeah.
And you might go in there and you might be assigned to some, you know, Indian reservation somewhere out in the middle of nowhere. And you might be going hands on a lot, or you might be doing some white collar crime, or you might be assigned to some drug task force. You know, a lot of the street agents really stand up people. It's when you get into the management, and that's a whole nother story. But the thing is, you don't know when you're getting in one of these agencies where you're going to be putting hands on. If you don't think you could shoot someone or carry a gun and hold that responsibility, find another line of work. There's intel analyst jobs out there. There's all sorts of other things. And if you don't feel comfortable putting a t-shirt over a target, and when you said putting a t-shirt over a target, I love that idea, because you know what? I am so used to shooting steel or paper that when you put the t-shirt on it, you think realistically, okay, where's my bullets going to go?
Yep.
Absolutely.
Because the whole premise behind it, right? And even like, you know, you've seen a big push with red dots, and I don't give them the secret. I need guys to think, right? It's like, hey, man, what do you think happens when that red dot goes on a red shirt? Because I want them. Yeah. It's like, I know the answer. Uh-huh. I'm not going to tell you, you know, but it's just trying to stem them to think, because you've got guys carrying different things for life-saving equipment. Mm-hmm. And it's like, you've never tested it. I would just want to wave it out myself to go, hey, man, is this a potential flaw in what I have set up? And then, oh, by the way, can I actually call my shots to know where my sights are lifting off of that target? Because if I'm just sitting there squeezing the trigger, having no mm-hmm. clue where these bullets are going, are they actually hitting the individual that's wishing to cause me harm? Are they just flying out into the abyss and hitting somebody that doesn't need to be shot?
You know, I'm so glad you brought that up, because it's not just getting bullets down range. It's getting bullets down range on the right target.
Oh,
and
yeah,
you see it all day long. People just spraying and praying. But mm-hmm. in the real world, if I spray and pray in my neighborhood, I'm going to hit someone or something mm-hmm. that I don't want to. And these bullets yep. go through walls. You know, people, when you're first getting into this, you see the movies and stuff. I mean, the bullets go right through that shit.
They do.
Yeah. When I was a kid, I had a little 22, you know, like mm-hmm. stupid 12, 13 year old Jason Piccolo. And I'm like, huh? So I shoot my 22 in my bedroom. Then it's the stupidest thing I've ever done, right through my wall, my brother's wall, and outside the house. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, oops.
Yep.
Probably shouldn't do that again. Maybe. So mom, dad, if you're listening to this, sorry about that. I tried to.
but Jason, you bring up a good point, right? Because it all circles back to the, you know, Warhawk self-eval, because again, it's their self-eval. And like the old line breaker, right? So I ask them, because I'll find somebody's going to have me, you know, that example I can use. And you get that one that's kind of, you know, let's call it half and half, you know, yeah, it breaks. I said, all right, guys, are we counting this? Oh, yeah, yeah, we're going to count it. We're going to count it. And then I kind of bust their bubble and go, well, Rick's not, you know, because I want to hold myself to a higher standard. And then I'm like, think about this. Yes, the physical body torso is an acceptable bullet trap, right? And you get some looks on that that people go, what? So yeah, you put them, you know, where they need to. I'm fine with that. But now you start winging things. Where's that projectile going? And I just go back to, you know, 4 was firearm safety. You know, number 4, identify your target, what's in line with what's behind it, never shoot any positive identified. So now you're launching bullets, you know, that are your wing clippers, you know, out into the abyss. Mm-hmm. And they're just sitting there going, oh. It's like, hey, man, I need you to think. That's the other part that a lot of people don't get. Is they're doing a bunch of things that is causing, you know, it's all problem solving. I give you loose instructions by design. I teach you a skill set. You know, prime example is the TAC mag change. Sometimes I say, yeah, we're going to shoot one mag. Sometimes I say, hey, you know, next couple mags, we're doing this. And then I wait till those mags all drop and merely just go, hey, guys, ammo management, shooter's responsibility. You're in a job that will kill you. I want to change mags when I want to, not when I have to. So you try to, you know, it's, mm-hmm. do I set them up for failure? I do for the most part, right? But some guys get it. Well, you didn't tell us, hey, Sarge, I'm not your training guy. I'm not here to babysit you. Rick's not going to be sitting in a car with you when you get into a gunfight and go, hey, man, swap mags before we do this. No way. I need them to think on the flat range, i.e. what I dub. Mm-hmm. Hey, man, this is the real world. And start to have them, you know, solving problems. So even with my civilian gun, I do the same thing. I need people that are going to handle firearms to be thinking. And I got it. You know, if you're, you know, a civilian coming to my class and you go, hey, man, I don't feel comfortable doing this. I got it. You may just be the recreational shooter. That's fine. But man, if you're in law enforcement, you've got a bullseye on your back. If you think you don't, you've lost your mind. And then, oh, by the way, you might actually have to use that firearm to defend yourself. And I hope you don't. But, you know, God forbid you do, you've got the skill to do it and shut down that threat as efficiently as possible.
And, you know, you brought up training, and I'm like, you know, I'm a multitasker. So everybody, I pulled up Rick's website here, and you have a, you know, it's not just geared towards law enforcement. I like this one day ladies only pistol, mm-hmm. one day shooting under physical duress. That's a absolutely great one. Mm-hmm. I haven't been to these yet, but I understand what they are. One day Warhog pistol. I'm going to have to, you know, I have to go to this. I want to become like the absolute best in my pistol. Then I want to become the absolute best in my carbine. Mm-hmm. You have some awesome, and I like the one day red dot. Mm-hmm. People are going to use red dot shooting under physical duress too. I love that. Mm-hmm. I like when you have to get that heart rate up, because in reality, you know the physiology of getting in gunfights and everything, how you're just like, holy shit.
But Jason, I'm gonna caveat here a little bit, right? So we do things a little bit different. It's just not raising your heart rate for one iteration and then that's it. Typically we're doing three iterations where, hey, you're accelerating the heart rate. You got to go down there. And here's the other thing. I don't let them load their gun until they get up there on the line. Not that I care about safety. No, man. It's just another firearms manipulation under physical duress. That's all. You know, once they get that first mag in, yeah, you can reload and go from there. But here's the thing, because I've had officers, well, I won't say they contacted me yet because they're still working their investigation stuff. But they're via a third party. It's like, hey, man. And I got to caveat this. I hate getting these text calls that when people go, hey, man, that stuff you taught me saved my life. I get it, but I don't want to. If I never get another one, I'd be happy, right? Because that means guys aren't out in harm's way. But long story short, you know, shooting ensues, then a foot pursuit, then another shooting, another foot pursuit. So we're not just giving them one Monty at it. It's like, hey, dude, I got it. Deal with this threat, run back, go back, you know, do it again. And oh, by the way, our friends at Brute Force, man, those Brute Force sandbags, absolute soul crusher. And typically, you know, what we do is we'll do an easier iteration because, oh yeah, we're doing it freestyle, which is two hands. We're doing it strong because yes, we have strong in there. And then, oh, by the way, we're doing it support. So we're really throwing the full Monty at them. So the first one's kind of a little sucker. It's like, yeah, man, it wasn't that bad. And then we bring in the second one where they're doing some bear crawls and throws. And that's usually when, if you want to say, the colorful language comes out and people are cussing Rick, but it's like, yeah, man, it's, you know, it is what it is. But, you know, you got to get people to that point, especially my LE guys.
Yeah, you do. The other thing I like really is night vision, man. Because, you know, back in the day, man, you couldn't get night vision. When I first started on the Border Patrol, all they had was the old, was it PVS-7s, and you were lucky if you got them. So I went out and bought my own monocular, and that thing was like, I don't know, it worked worth a shit. I ended up just using my own built-in night vision. But yeah, man, I like how you're doing night vision courses with carbine, with everything, but then working around a vehicle. So much happens around vehicles that, and that's the other thing, you know, vehicles don't stop every bullet. But the advantage is if you know to put bullets through windows and put bullets through vehicles, a lot of times a bad guy doesn't. So use a split second against them and take out the culprit, take out the suspect or whatever, man.
Sure. And see, here's the thing. So it's a little bit, different when we're doing vehicle work, depending on who we're teaching, right? So for my civilians, first and foremost, you know, we see too much on the interwebs, people bailing out of these cars and doing all this shooting and blasting this other stuff. Here's the bottom line. Do not get out of that vehicle. If that engine is still running, do not get out. Because mobility equals survivability. You have options when that vehicle's going. When you bail, that's when dramas start. Now, I get it. Vehicle's disabled. I don't care. Listen, if the engine's running, you're good. I don't care if all four tires are flat, because we've seen plenty of examples of cars with no rubber on the rims outrunning police, right? It'll still go. It still has options. Oh, by the way,
get the hell out of there.
That's it. And here's the other part. You've got to think, I've got a 3,000-pound weapon. And I get it. It's not natural if you have to run somebody over. But if you're in fear for your life, do I sit there and try to draw my pistol, shoot through the glass, which probably won't get a first round hit, depending on distance, a whole bunch of variables in there, right? Or do I just hit the gas pedal and boom, I'm moving out of there. Hey man, either he moves or he doesn't. If it warrants deadly force, doesn't matter what tool you're using, it doesn't. Get yourself out of harm's way. Now, I have to go into more, and now I'll usually do it with my civilian guys. You know, we'll talk about, there's no magic sauce as far as safe points in your vehicles. There's some points that's better than others, but there's so many variables when it comes to cars. For my LE guys, yes, we go into that a little more because they have to understand their vehicles. And hey, man, if they are truly in a pinch during that traffic stop, because that's typically where they're getting their dramas at, if they understand how to use their vehicle to the maximum amount of cover, and then, oh, by the way, if they do have to fire inside of a vehicle because they do have a suspect that's, you know, warranting deadly force towards them, hey, man, how can I actually shoot? Where's some penetration points? Where can I get some hits on this threat to shut him down so he's not causing any more harm to myself, my partner, my community? Yada, yada, yada. I can go on all day long, that stuff. But it's critical, man. And here's the thing. We're just not arbitrarily pulling the stuff out. It's not theory we're teaching. It's all experience-based. off of just different things that I've been exposed to over the years. And I'm going to give you, hey, here's what works, because you brought up the key point, night vision, right? Doing stuff during the day and also at night. So here's the applicability, you know, both day and night, just not on the flat range during the hours of, you know, sunrise or light or whatever you want to say. So I don't care if it's raining. Hey, man, pack a raincoat. I was out in Utah earlier this year. I guess I was the only guy that brought my rain jacket. Who would think out in the middle of the desert, we've got hail coming in, we've got freezing rain. And it was like, I think it was a May class. Oh, let me put my jacket on. Everyone's like, hey, man, you got a rain jacket? Of course I do. I don't go anywhere without it.
Exactly.
You know? Hey, we're going to take a break? Nope. Still training. So, but hey, man, you got to fight through it. But the point being is Jason, it's all the mindset part is the hardest thing. You know, just like it's not natural if you've never rammed a vehicle before, not getting into all the dynamics of that, but it's not natural to hit things in our car. Why? I got it. Insurance is going up. This is going up. Man, when it's your life, and I get it, it's hard to pull it out. People go, well, I'll just do it. You'd be surprised. That dude standing right in front of your car, you know, holding a pistol or sitting there, you know, threatening you, whatever tool he's going to use to threaten you. Are you going to run him over?
Road rage, brother. I do this every week. I do court TV, and it seems like more and more we're analyzing like road rage incidents. It's always been there, but now with everybody having dash cam, like I even got a dash cam, and the reason I do is so I could say, okay, this has happened, blah, blah, blah. Anybody out there, spend $40 or whatever, get yourself a dash cam. It's worth it, especially when it comes to your word against them. But the thing is, the shit going on out there, if someone's going to road rage against you, don't retaliate. Get the fuck away.
Yeah.
Slow down. Get off the next exit. Let them go, because these jackasses are pulling out guns and are using their weapons as that 3,000-pound killing machine to take you out. And they will. They don't care if you have kids in the vehicle or whatever. They're going to shoot. So, yeah, man, a vehicle is just as deadly, if not more, than anything going out there, man.
Yeah.
Well, brother, the next step is everybody, you probably hear the dogs barking like crazy. When Jason Piccolo does the Protectors podcast, or should I say when we do the Protectors podcast,
I like it.
In the basement, the dogs always see something outside and want to bark and tell me what's going on. First warning sign. I love dogs, man. They are like true protectors. And you and I love what you had going on with Explosive Apparel. And I didn't know anything about it until I saw those guys and I looked into the story about Duco. And just amazing, man. Amazing how they are like a family member. And their loss hits sometimes worse than some family members.
Oh, yeah.
But yeah, man. Let's talk about Duco.
Yeah, buddy. So Duco was, he was my Dutch Shepherd. He was my actually military working dog. I picked him up in 2012. And really, when you look at Duco's story, I didn't want him. So Duco was coming off the back of a loss. So I'd lost my my Mally, Marco, and here's our float dog. It's a, you know, Brendel Dutchie. And it's like, dude, I don't want him. I want my Mally back, you know? Got him, I think it was in May 2012, and a couple months later we're in Afghanistan. And yeah, dude, that dog, super social. But when it was time to bring it, he would absolutely crush a man. And I've said this, you know, ever since losing, and I kind of said it beforehand, but in my opinion, Duco was the gold standard, you know, when it comes to a working dog. If I could sit there and clone him, trust me, all these guys, their problems would be gone. Now, granted, we trained all the time. And, you know, do we train that much once we retired? Yeah, we did some pretty cool stuff. You know, went and fetched a rifle for, you know, a 5/11 video shoot, some other stuff, and it was all cool. But the thing with Duco, right, is you got to understand, and with all these working dogs, they ask for nothing but require everything. You know, so you're their advocate. I was the guy that's out there in the battlefield going, hey, man, do I employ him to here? Do I do this? Do I do whatever? You know, there was one time it's like, hey, you need to send him in this house. Well, there's still 10 foreign fighters in there. What am I going to get? A dead dog? It's like, nope, doesn't make sense. But no, he was just, he was a fantastic dog, because you'd sit there 1 second, he's just sitting there chilling out. But man, when he flicked that switch, absolute beast mode came out, and just, he set the standard that, at least for me, there'll be no other dog that can even come close to that. They don't understand fear, sit there, you know, he knew he was there to protect his pack. And that's what he did. And there were times, you know, we'd send him out looking for bad guys. Yep. You know, all right, cool. We grabbed a piece of terrain. We want to get a little more, you know, further hold, silent recall back. He'd go to one of his uncles, you know, it's like, hey man, little leg tap. Come here, buddy. Dad's over here. So, but no, I mean, the boys love the dog so much. It's like, there was one night I lost him on target. He's sitting there going, you want to talk about a handler's worst fear? It's like, hey, where's my dog? I'm sitting there trying to recall him back and pull up his monitor. And next, you know, he's got a set of multicam pants next to him. I'm like, hey man, who's got the dog? Oh, we got him. That's like, little courtesy, please. You know, just let me know you got, I don't care that you have him, but just let me know. Cause I'm sitting there going, all right, where's he at? Did he fall into the abyss? Is, you know, what's going on? You go out, you know, a back door that nobody saw and, or found some hidey hole, or what is he into? So, yeah. And it's funny because I just came back last week. I was at the, American Tactical Canine Association teaching out there. So, kind of bittersweet, you know, chatting a little bit about, you know, about Duco out there, but then, you know, getting around the dogs again, cause I really, you gotta think when I lost him in July, I kind of shut down. It was one of those that when you're on this planet because of that dog, you know, something that a lot of people don't get. Some people understand, but a lot don't. And it was just one of those that, man, when you got to say goodbye, it was a gut punch. But the support that came out, that's the amazing part. So on the one side, I will smash, you know, social and go absolute rubbish. But on the same flip side, the stories I can tell about Duco, but we still have him on warhog.com because he has his own page on there. So if you go to the about, In Honor of Duco is what we're titling it, and, you know, putting it on there. So whether it's, you know, Explosive Apparel Design in their whole Blackbeard and Friends Duco series, which they totally just happened to reach out to me. They were getting ready to launch that right around the same time that Duco passed, and yep, there it is. Join the mailing list. Yep. So yeah, this is kind of, if you want to say, that's the pride and joy of the website. So
picture. Yeah, everybody, we're taking a look at the website for everybody listening out there. And just go to Warhog, WARHOGG.com. And hey, check this out. Whiskey Alpha Romeo Hotel Oscar Golf Golf. Boom.
Damn. I like it. So yeah, picture Duke, you know, me and him in Afghanistan. But yeah, there's, you know, the Explosive Apparel Design, the whole Duco series.
Got some bourbon here too.
Yeah. So here's the funny thing, right? I think it was back in June, we did, it was me, Pat Mack, Dutch Moyer, and Jamie Caldwell. We were sitting with Paul from Teutonic Distillery. And I'd had the Teutonic before, and the double barrel maple is absolutely my favorite. So I think it was actually Jamie that got things started up with Paul doing, you know, Paul came up with the labels because he gave us some special bottles that had labels on the back. And one of the pictures was that very one, but obviously Duco had passed yet. So we didn't say in honor of Duco. That's something I did. And Paul was good. And yeah, man, $20 from every sale of those bottles, man, you know, are going to Canine Charity. So, and like I said, it's a double dip deal. So that is my favorite flavor of the Teutonic. It's got, you know, his label on the back there. And we just kind of go, you know, telling Duco stories, all the different things that he's done. You know, it's funny how you don't care about some things when they're alive, but when they pass, you want to kind of get things going. So, where we did do stuff with Trigger Time TV, you know, TV show, you know, the whole IMDb thing. So yeah, you know, I reached out and was like, hey man, I want to get, you know, Duke and IMDb page. Just,
oh, nice.
You know, yeah. Just to pay him that respect. Right. And, you know, if I can just keep his story going, because again, I am indebted to him because I'm here on numerous occasions, as are a bunch of other guys, because of his actions. Yeah, that's what we're going to do. So, whether it's, you know, and it's hard to see here on the studio, my fingers always mess up which way to go, but yep, that's his actual, you know, assault vest there, his leash. Had another buddy of mine, you know, the whole War Dog Duco bone. I got another, you know, Jason and Sonny from Clinton PD, you know, that flag behind us, you know, it's got Duco on there. So, you know, bunch of people that knew Duke, you know, just that support, I think is, could I have still sent out an email and done it that way? Yeah. I mean, I could have. And you know, to your viewers, listeners out there, yes, if you gave me some type of condolences, because I still have to go back because I want to give everyone a note, but man,
I can't imagine, bro. It's tough.
I mean, you mm-hmm. heard the emotion, and here's the thing. I'm very open as far as my emotions, right? I think a lot of times us as alphas, we get this thing, oh, we can't be emotional. We can't do this. It's not masculine. Dude, here's the bottom line. We're all human beings, right? Did mm-hmm. I package that stuff up for a very long time? I did. My good buddy, Joe Andres, who was killed in 2005, I didn't mourn for Joe for probably over 10 years, right? But when you start doing it, there's something therapeutic about it, because when you're dealing with a damaged brain, that's right, my brain is damaged. I've got multiple traumatic brain injuries, God knows how many hundreds, thousands, whatever. You can only box stuff up for so long before that stuff, it's got to go somewhere, or you're taking away bandwidth or something. Mm-hmm. And I was actually down at Paneo Productions where we shoot our instructional videos at, and they were doing this little video called Profile of Courage. And we're talking about Joe, and I got emotional. Again, you know the deal, video, we could have clipped it out. It's like, nope, leave it. Because at that point, that was one of those points where for me, it was important to let guys know, you know, I don't care if you're alpha, warrior, cop, pick whatever word you want. I don't care. Dude, you're going to have emotions, right?
Yep.
It's perfectly fine. I'd rather shed a tear than sit there hoop and holler because we think anger's, you know, inappropriate, you know, emotion, which yes, it is. But, you know, there's times we got to mourn. And like I said, you know, when I lost Duke, yeah, man, it was absolutely soul crushing, probably the biggest loss, you know, to date for me. And I mean, I'm still dealing with it now. I guarantee I will deal with it for the rest of my life. However, what do? We keep his memory alive, because if we say their names, you know, they're never in essence gone. We're still, you know, passing that along. So whether it's Joe Andres and the whole Christmas cake thief story, you know, trust me, there's plenty of other things I've chatted about Joe, but when I get those little texts from people and they send me that stupid Christmas cake, yeah, man, it's just them thinking about it. You know, whether it's, you know, hey man, here's a picture of, you know, Blackbeard and friend Duco series. And, you know, you've got the hat and the shirt and the sweatshirt, and people are sending me pics or putting it on social. Yeah. That there is pros, right? Cause that shows the support. Mm-hmm. But Rich and those guys took it a step further, man. And my hat's off to them, because I didn't ask them for any of this. So where they are a UK-based company, you know, and I've got some great ties to the UK. They went in on the Union Jack. Yep, he put explosive design on there, or explosive apparel. I forget which one he's got on there. But on the US flag, he put Duco in the center. And yeah, it's like,
awesome.
Yeah. So wasn't asked. It was just something he did. So, you know, it's just, it's little things like that. You know, same thing, reaching out to Paul. Hey man, can we put in honor of Duco label on the bourbon? Yeah, no problem. You know, we've got some things in the work where we're going to do in honor of Duco charity project. So that'll be up and coming here shortly. Our canine product line, we're getting ready to launch. We had to put a slight delay because I had to get labels remade because I'm putting in honor of Duco on those, you know, so it's continuing to share his story and just what an amazing dog he was. But everyone always wants, you know, it's always about the battlefield this and the battlefield that, which is, that's cool. But here's the thing.
It's not exactly all battle. It's like when you told me the story, like when we wrote that article together about how he's there for the team after the battle, like when you guys are in a break, you're on downtime, he's there. He's like a part of the family. He's like, hey, you know what? He's almost like, it's more than just a war dog. It's an emotional dog. It's someone who has emotions. It's really a member of the family.
Well, and that was the part I was trying to get at, right? So your title falls exactly in line with this. The protector. Here's the part I did not realize. So of course my job requires me to go out and, you know, travel all around in training. My wife tells me he was my protector. You know, did she necessarily want him when he came home? Nope. She'll be the first one to tell you. I mean, because she knew what he did, right? But at the same token, when you have such a social dog as he, but such a wrecking machine, that was her protector. And I mean, granted, they had their own special bond, and she would do stupid things, feed him goldfish. Like, he never knew what goldfish were, right? Mama introduced that. He got the nickname the heater because she would give him stuff from the table. And of course, she's training him to stand right there and basically just pant on her leg. You need to get this heater out of here. I was like, nope, you train that one. Going out and getting them little, you know, doggy toys and stuff like that. But the key part was, that's the underlying, yes, you can give him, yes, he was a combat assault dog, I got it. But he was a protector. And so he took his military service, transitioned great, you know, to being part of the Hog family. And yes, we did give him our last name. He is Duco Hog. But yeah, he was her protector. So, and trust me, if anyone, three legs and all, because, you know, a lot of people don't realize we had to get that, his right rear leg amputated when he got the officer's coma. Trust me, he still would have brought, you know, the full Monty. That was just who he was. So, yeah.
I love it, man. I'm so glad you could tell the story. That's the thing, is like, say their names. When you lose someone, keep saying their names. Because, and you know, that's a lot of times I tell people, just write a book, write a journal, write in a nonfiction, whatever, because it just, it helps. Podcasts. Writing, talking, and I just keep saying names, and whiskey. And now I got to go buy a bottle of whiskey because, you know, it's going to go somewhere in this office of mine here.
Yeah. Well, you hit 2 points, right? And it really, if you want to say my two biggest regrets, number one, I didn't take enough pictures. So, like, for example, I don't have a picture of me and Joe Andres. I got not a one, right? Maybe somebody else grabbed one and I don't have, but I don't have a one. So I would say whenever you get a chance, take a picture with people. And you talked about journaling, right? So journaling is a twofold deal. You know, here we are, the 30th anniversary of Desert Storm. It'd be kind of cool to look at back going, hey, what was I doing back then? Because people ask, I don't remember. You don't remember exact timelines. But, you know, journaling can also be therapeutic as well. Just get your thoughts down on paper. There's something to that. And then here's the other thing. You talk about saying their names. So I don't know if you've got one of these or not, memorial bracelet. Okay. Here's the thing. I found it's a way when I see somebody that has one, I always ask, hey man, who you got? Because it opens up the story. Hey man, I want to hear about your friend, because I'm going to tell you about Joe. You know, you go up to Arlington, Section 60, man, it's a rough place to go. A lot of friends there. Man, I've been up there when I was first, if you want to say, working through this whole mourning type process, you know, shortly after Christmas. I think it was like the 28th of December. Here's my wife, God bless her soul, man. It's like probably 20 degrees, wind blowing out there at 60. I mean, it is just, it's rough. And there's another family there, you know, very close to where Joe's buried at. And we strike up a conversation and they start telling me about their son. I start telling them about Joe. And it's just, there's something therapeutic about sharing their story. There's something therapeutic about getting the name out there. Because I'm an honest believer. Here's the thing. It's not about Rick and what Rick's done, because Rick's here, right? Me and Duco were fortunate enough to leave the battlefield. There's guys that weren't. And if we don't continue to tell their stories, or same thing with the dogs, right? That same 2012, you know, rotation when that picture was taken at, you know, buddy of mine, Timo didn't come home, but Timo did a job. You know, Timo saved guys' lives. So how do you sit there and share that story? You know, so I've been on certain ones where it's like, hey man, tell us war stories. I don't want to tell Rick's war stories. To me, they're boring, right? Let me tell you about guys that aren't here. Let me tell you it, and not so much what happened on the battlefield, right? No one's going to remember that. People are going to remember that, hey, Joe was the first one going in, you know, engaged old boy. What's it matter? It doesn't matter. What they remember is that stupid Christmas cake, because that was the part. That's the hook, right? That's the story I can share. That's the one that people are going to take a picture of that little Debbie cake and go, hey man, thinking of Joe. Thank you. That's all it is. Because now that name goes on, you know, and in essence, he never dies. He continues to live. You know, same thing with Duco, man. Share a story. I mean, look at all these people wearing, you know, the clothing line, drinking the bourbon. It's like,
yeah,
granted, you get to look at this mug as well. you know, Duco's probably the better looking one out of us. But
well, you know what? That's why I'm glad your mug's not on a hat. But I'm just kidding, man. That's my favorite hat now. My wife's like always like, what's that? But I go and explain it. You know, the kids, I explain it.
Yeah.
And obviously I'm wearing the Protector's hat now because, hey, this is the Protector's podcast.
No, but trust me, I'm with you, brother. No.
Because that's when you can never have too many hats, knives, and guns. I always tell people that. I have like 30 hats, but that's my favorite hat, man. I love it. Because I love dogs, man. They are more than – they are such a lifeline, such just a family member. Even when they bark during podcasts and my Chihuahua tries to bite everybody because she's a killer.
Well, they all – those little dogs, man. Here's the thing with the little dogs, right? If you could get some of that little dog mentality in some of these big dogs, man, you'd have a combo. But those ankle biters, they think they are 10 feet tall. And it's like, listen here, runt, I'm going to punch you, you know, over three fences. But you're like, all right, I got it, buddy. So
the thing with her is like, she loves me. She doesn't like some men. But if there was a tractor trailer coming at me, she would just bite it. She would go right at it. She doesn't even care, whatever.
Yeah,
a huge ass dog. She'll take it on any day if she thinks it's gonna bother me. She's just nuts, man. But I love it.
But those little guys, man, they're so maneuverable. And it was funny because, you know, we've got a couple little dogs, and they'd kind of harass Duke a little bit when it first started because they thought, oh, we can go play with this guy. And could they run circles around him? Of course, because their turn radius is a lot shorter. But eventually, they figured out, man. He had no drama swatting them. He's like, just take that paw and go, bam, and it's rolling out there. And like, yeah, we don't want to play with this guy anymore. He plays a little rough than these other guys. But they, you know, if he could sit there and kind of track him down or they work themselves into a corner, forget it. You know, it's like, hey, I'm just going to swat you around and play. So, yeah.
Well, brother, I appreciate you coming on, man. We had a lot to talk about today. First off, we're going to go to Warhog, WARHOGG. .com. Hit the subscribe button for the newsletter. And then we're going to, I would say follow us on social media, but as our first part of our conversation is Facebook and Instagram, WhatsApp down right now. But hey, we got our web pages and we got our ham radios and all this other good stuff. The other thing is you can never have too many knives, guns, and hats. And I do see you have a Notch hat on there. So we'll give a big shout out to Paul and the crew at Notch. Yep. Excellent, excellent company. Really support them. And brother, I appreciate you coming on, man.
Yeah, buddy. And, you know, since you brought up Paul, I'm going to hit Paul because we had him on the podcast, right? Because I think it's cool to try to incorporate other people and just – I'm all about listening to other entrepreneurs and going, hey, man, how'd you come up with it? And it's funny because we had a chat, you know, as far as doing the whole and he was successful on working his patent stuff, and I had to deal with, you know, U.S. Patent Trademark Office, and that's a whole nother story in itself. But, man – That's America, man. You know, if you've got something you want to sit there, you got to sit there. Is it worth it taking it to a patent? It's going to cost you some money, man. You know, and then it's one of those that the patent attorneys are not like the ambulance chasers. You know, it's like they only get paid. It doesn't matter win, lose, or draw. They're still getting their money, right?
Yep.
Not like the ambulance chaser where he's got to sit there and go, oh, yeah, man, we're going to get you big because I'm getting a fatter payday. It's like, no. So that's a whole nother interesting topic. I guess we'll save that for another day, but
yeah, Paul's a good dude, man. I met him at Shot, last Shot. Okay, brother, we will talk soon, man.
Awesome, Jason.